This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bottom of this hour, good guess on what took place today in the Supreme Court with unions and the significance of this in the short and long term, also a little bit on the Supreme Court's decision, basically say, let's go with the procedures and how cases work their way through the courts before we're going to rule on DACA, which in the end is probably going to push back any deadlines. So the idea is something needed to get done by March 5th and some sort of agreement between the Democrats, the president, the more conservatives on the Republican side, and maybe more the mainstream Republicans, and how far this is going to be pushed. I've said for a while, I did not expect any sort of agreement because I don't see how you can keep either the far left or the far right enough in line in the House to get a majority. And there are no signs right now the president will sign anything unless he gets exactly what he wants. Regarding overall immigration, you also had that report, I don't know if you saw it, Adam, over the weekend from the Washington Post, that the president is speaking with the president of Mexico, and they're going to have a scripted phone call, right? They're just going to go over things and set up, you know, when President of Mexico is coming here, but President Trump freelanced and started talking about the wall and payment, and now all of a sudden the president of Mexico is not coming here. Wouldn't you like the audio of that phone call? That would be rather interesting, to say the least. But after this traffic weather news, we'll go with keyword for cash, another chance for you to win $1,000 and you pay nothing. There's no reason why you shouldn't play this. So that's coming up, but we'll get to more on Florida and now the scrutiny and the criticism towards the sheriff, Sheriff Scott Israel in Broward County. Is it fair? And play some good sound bites and some pointed questions from Jake Tapper and Scott Israel yesterday. That's about 5-6 minutes away right now, Adam, as a news update. Here we go. For us, it's hour number two of the show, and it's our second opportunity. Keyword for cash. All you have to do is get that texting machine. Adam, do you have one of those texting machines on you?
No.
I think it also works if you just shout it out outside your window, right? I mean, Hammer, that should work also.
I've had people call in here and shout the word on the phone.
Sure, that works. Go do that. Do that right now quickly. I'm sure Hammer would love to take those phone calls. National contest, but you could win locally. This hour's word is desk. In school, the kids work at a desk. Adam works at his desk. Our desks sit higher here so we can stand. Adam, desk, would you like to work it in some way just to help people out a little bit? Don't want to know. That's it. Desk, it's up to you. Seriously. 72881. It's a long one, so we'll say it a few times. It's not ours. Send it here if you want, but it's not going to do anything. 72881. It's all tied to Intercom, I'm assuming, right, Hammer? That's why we got
it? I would believe so, yes.
Okay. So, and I love Intercom. Hammer loves Intercom. Adam hates Intercom. I don't know why you feel that way, but again, that's Adam Carter. Desk is the word, and text away to 72881. If you send it there, you'll get a confirmation, right? That you don't automatically win. Later on, you might get a phone call, and it might ask you the word, and you better know the word for this hour. Can't give the hour, maybe if Dave and John or Paul and Jordana later, this word.
No, that won't work.
It is desk. Jake Tapper yesterday had Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel on. The sheriff was given a great deal of credit early on his public stance, on his support of the students, rallying the community, and slowly but surely things have started to slip a little bit due to a variety of reasons on what information he shared, when he shared that information, the lack of follow-up on what looks like, in hindsight, a number of red flags. So Jake Tapper had on Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel. We're going to play three sound bites, which gives you a little bit of an idea of what took place with Tapper yesterday.
I have one last question for you, sir. Florida State Representative Bill Hager from Boca sent a letter to the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, yesterday, asking him to remove you for negligence of duty and incompetence. Here's what he wrote, quote, an investigation of by Sheriff Israel into the unfathomable inaction of these deputies will do nothing to bring back the 17 victims. The sheriff was fully aware of the threat this individual presented to his community and chose to ignore it. What's your response, and will you resign?
It was a shame. Of course, I won't resign. It was a shameful letter. It was politically motivated. I never met that man. He doesn't know anything about me. And the letter was full of misinformation. I wrote a letter back to the governor. I talked about all the mistakes that Hager made in his letter. It was a shameful, politically motivated letter that had no facts. Of course, I won't resign.
Last question, sir. Do you think that if the Broward Sheriff's Office had done things differently, this shooting might not have happened?
Yeah, listen, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, O.J. Simpson would still be in the record books.
I don't know what that means. There's 17 dead people, and there's a whole long list of things your department could have done differently.
How could after action reports are. That's for lessons learned reports are for. I have entered into conversation with Chuck Wexler of the Police Executive Research Forum. They will be coming to town to do an independent after action lessons learned report. We understand everything wasn't done perfectly. And if it happened in Los Angeles or Chicago or any other city, every person wouldn't perform perfectly. That's not what happens. Yes, if Scott Peterson went into, do I believe if Scott Peterson went into the into that building, there was a chance he could have neutralized the killer and saved lives? Yes, I believe that. But as far as anything else done at this point, I can't say that.
Well, we hope you get to the bottom of it.
I might say it. What's that?
We hope you get to the bottom of it, sir. There are a lot of people wondering a lot of questions.
We will.
Are you really not taking any responsibility for the multiple red flags that were brought to the attention of the Broward Sheriff's Office about this shooter before the incident, whether it was people near him, close to him, calling the police
on him? I could only take responsibility for what I knew about. I exercised my due diligence. I've given amazing leadership to this agency.
Amazing leadership?
Yes, Jake. There's a lot of things we've done throughout. You don't measure a person's leadership by a deputy not going into a. These deputies received the training they needed.
Maybe you measure somebody's leadership by whether or not they protect the community. In this case, you've listed 23 incidents before the shooting involving the shooter, and still nothing was done to keep guns out of his hands, to make sure that the school was protected, to make sure you were keeping an eye on him. Your deputy at the school failed. I don't understand how you can sit there and claim amazing leadership.
Jake, on 16 of those cases, our deputies did everything right. Our deputies have done amazing things. We've taken this, in the 5 years I've been sheriff, we've taken the Broward Sheriff's Office to a new level. I work with some of the bravest people I've ever met. One person at this point, one person didn't do what he should have done. It's horrific. The victims here, the families, I pray for them every night. It makes me sick to my stomach that we had a deputy that didn't go in, because I know if I was there, if I was on that wall, I would have been the first then, along with so many of the other
people. I think there are a lot of people, sir, who think that there are a lot of mistakes other than that one deputy.
Tapper nailed so much there for me, Adam. And as usual, he asked pertinent, specific, outstanding questions. And there's no bias and there's no background. And I hope the Trump folks come to their senses on that. When the sheriff says he provided amazing leadership, I think where it bothers a lot of people, Adam, and some of this is I think, very fair towards Sheriff Israel, and some is in the broadest sense. But there's been too much out there. There was the individual who spotted something through YouTube involving Nicholas Cruz, and they said they couldn't identify Nicholas Cruz. When a lot of people said, now, wait a second. If you start working with other authorities, could you put this together? Then the reach out to the FBI tip line with specific mentions. Then, as Tapper pointed out, the 23 individual reaches, calls and interactions with the department itself. Then you have what the school knew. Then what you also have is social services and what they did. And there's a lot of people, Adam, who are absolutely infuriated, and I think rightfully so, that this information in some collaborative way should have been pooled in an area and more red flags should have been blinking as bright as red to say, no way should this kid legally be allowed to buy a gun. How many times do you have to have people reaching out and in specific words to the FBI and to the sheriff and to the schools saying, this kid is violent. There's something which isn't right with this kid. He needs help. The authorities need to step in. And I'm not saying every single time somebody's going to get arrested at him, but when the sheriff in particular talks about his amazing leadership and then tries to direct this at one individual who did not go in and was completely derelict in his duty, and it wouldn't be easy, it would be incredibly difficult, but that's why you have that job. I think Sheriff Israel, when he's asked more questions, I think his answers are going to need to be better. Is it fair in your view from what you heard there and some of the other comments building up? Because there's a political side of this that I want to get to. But is it fair from your view, the criticism he's starting to take the last 3-4 days?
Yes. I mean, you may not like, if you're the head of any company, organization, or department, or police department, if it happens on your watch and you lead the department, unfortunately, that reflects on your leadership. So, yes, I mean, are you the one who actually makes mistakes? No, but how many CEOs get fired over poor performance by people lower than them? They may not have had direct orders to do certain things, but mistakes of the department fall on the head, and I have no problem with this sheriff getting criticized, and honestly, he's not handling it very well.
I think he's handled it horribly. I don't need to hear him separate his shoulder, pat himself on the back. And you're 100% right.
Form.
How many times does something happen in businesses every single hour of every single day where, let's use our place, if the news department, if you and Steve and Laura and Edgar and Susie and Sloan and Al do a great job, who's going to get some of that credit? Shannon's going to get some of that credit because she's the general manager of this radio station. Is Shannon there every day in the newsroom? No. But Shannon is involved in the hiring, or even when Shannon came in, the decision to keep people on board. Does that mean if you're in charge of thousands and thousands of people that if one screws up that it's all on you? No. But when you have the signs out there, and they are missing, and that's just one. It's sign after sign after sign. And I'm sorry, fair or not, he is also taking some of the criticism from the other organizations who also were inadequate at their work. Now on another point about the sheriff and what he said and what he didn't say before the town hall, and then the politics tied to this. We'll get to that in moments. If you want to chime in through a text, you certainly can. 81807. 81807. Here's another part where Sheriff Israel does not look good. When the town hall took place, middle of last week, we gave, you know, I'll say it again, both of us gave credit to Marco Rubio and Dana Loesch for showing up. The senator from Florida and Dana Loesch, the chief spokesman for the NRA, they were walking into a crowd that wanted no part of the words that they were going to say. And to their credit, they showed up and answered questions. And I completely understand the emotions. I can't identify with all the emotions, but I'll say this. There were times when the crowd was very disrespectful to the two, even though on a lot of these issues, I probably would agree with the crowd more. But when people show up, there should be a level of respect. The sheriff was viewed as a hero that night. When he was standing up, he was lecturing the NRA. And by then, the sheriff already knew that Scott Peterson had not tried to enter the school to stop this. Someone is working for him, had not entered the school. Now, when the president says today, I would have walked right in there without a gun, we have zero proof of that, absolutely no proof of that. So it's really good to say that, but there's no proof. I can't imagine how daunting that is, Adam, when you have that responsibility. But if you don't want that responsibility, don't do the job. It's as simple as that. But when Israel that night is verbally pointing the finger at the NRA and Rubio, and he knows that his person on site stayed outside when this was going on, I think he looks like a fool at that point. Don't you?
Oh, for sure. He loses a lot of credibility. I mean, you can have arguments all you want, and the sheriff can have arguments against the NRA and the job that they do to promote gun ownership and gun use. But you got to accept the fact that you had a large failure in this too, your office and you being the head of that office.
Yeah. And you knew it, by the way, when you're there talking to millions and pointing the fingers at others. But when there was complete incompetence by your officer on the scene, funny, no words are said. Now, let's be honest, this is turning enormously political because you're going to have more Republicans, not all, but more Republicans who feel like, stop taking, this is about mental health. This isn't about making more laws to make it more difficult for those law-abiding citizens. It's about directing your energy there. And so Republicans feel like that they're taking too much criticism, that they're being blamed too much, and that the NRA is getting blamed too much, and that Democrats are directing them. Well, guess what? The sheriff is a Democrat. And so now you have the House Republicans in the state of Florida wrote to the governor asking to suspend the sheriff from the office. 73 House Republicans wrote the governor asking him to suspend this. Doesn't matter what it is, Adam. It's politics forever. And now he's pushing back and saying this is politically driven. The governor's office, Governor Scott, who's differing with the NRA on some issues, had this to say. There must be an independent investigation. That is what I asked the FDLE commissioner to immediately start the process. The governor said in a written statement adding they need to discuss the matter with the House Speaker. I've spoken to the Speaker regularly since the shooting, and like me, he wants the families to have answers and for there to be full accountability. That's what the victims and families deserve. The sheriff's office has said they will fully cooperate. I have no problem, Adam, with a full investigation, including Broward County, including maybe if these other three officers didn't go in also. But I want this to be broad-based, don't you? I would like to know not just the sheriff, but what's going on with the school, any role that the state can play in trying to push towards the FBI because it happened in their state, on the laws in that effect. I get tired of task force, but we're being clear here. There are 100% fair questions asked to the sheriff's office. But my point here, Adam, let's not limit it. Let's include other individuals involved in this, not just only to figure out how this madman was allowed to have a gun, which he never, ever should have been allowed to have a gun. But for me, Adam, how to stop it going forward. Isn't that a fair point instead of just narrowing this?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's, if we think the sheriff's office or the NRA are the only ones at fault here, obviously there's many, there's a lot of blame to go around for sure.
No, and I mean, one of the texters is saying anybody that accepts money from the NRA should be recalled. I don't agree with the NRA on most of these issues. You're seeing a lot of pushback on the NRA with a lot of businesses running from them. But simply because you accepted money, you should be recalled? No. We have elections. Vote them out. But there, because one extraordinarily powerful lobby has a hammer on them, which is sad in my view, you don't get recalled because of that. It has to be some violation of the law. There's elections coming up. Get involved. Stop just, for the folks who just complain about it, get involved and show some significance by letting your vote matter. And we'll see if there's a change coming up in about 7-8 months.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
An issue many people believe will be one of the biggest issues that the Supreme Court will decide all session long was heard today. Josh Idelson is with us from Bloomberg. I'm going to look at one of Josh's recent stories. The Supreme Court case that could devastate unions, and this one is getting a lot of coverage today, and Hammer did a great job in tracking Josh down. Thank you, sir, for your time. I appreciate it. Why is this one as significant as you and so many people who know this case are making it out to be?
Thanks for having me. So this is a case in which the justices are considering and likely will make the whole public sector, all of government employment, where around half of U.S. union members work, right to work. That means people who work for the government, state, local, federal, other, would have the option not to contribute anything to fund a union, even if that union is representing them. And we've seen in the private sector, right to work has been an effective instrument for weakening unions, weakening them in their economic power, in their political power. It means that some share of people who are represented by the union, who right now, even if they don't like the union or they don't feel like it's worth it, have to contribute at least what's called a fair share fee to pay for the bargaining that's being done for them, instead will be able to pay nothing. And of course, the big question is, will it be a small number or a big number of people, if they get the chance, who will choose to stop providing any funding to the union?
But the whole idea, right, if I'm somehow benefiting from this, even if I'm not a member, but I'm getting some sort of benefit, should I have to contribute in some way?
Right, and this is a decades-old issue. There is a 40-some-year-old precedent at the Supreme Court where they've tried splitting the baby before, where they said nobody in the public sector has to pay for the more political advocacy type stuff that the union is doing unrelated to collective bargaining, but you can be required, if a union is bargaining a contract and enforcing a contract for you, to chip in a share of the cost of that kind of work. And that's the precedent that conservatives and the plaintiffs in this case and prior cases pursuing the same result are trying to get rid of, and instead establish a new precedent that would say under the First Amendment, you cannot be required as a condition of working for the government to fund a union.
So why is the case coming up in this version again, since, as you've said, various versions of this law have been decided for years and years, going back to one of the signature cases in 1977?
Well, there's been a concerted effort from conservative advocacy groups to push a case like this to the court's doorstep. And we saw several years ago in a case called Knox, the court raised the question in a much narrower opinion of why this is allowed at all for people to be required to fund unions. And then we saw a somewhat broader than that case, Harris v. Quinn, which established right to work for a category of what some people call pseudo-public employees, people who are doing Medicaid-funded home health work. And then it looked like the big climax was going to be in 2016 in a case called Friedrichs. And then, to everyone's surprise, Antonin Scalia died.
Right.
And so we had an 8-person, 4-4 split, which meant status quo remained in place. But we already know, we think, how 8 of the 9 justices would rule on this issue. And there were efforts to quickly get another case like this further through the pipeline. And now here we have it, what we all expect will be the last case for a while on this question, and one with a new nationwide precedent for the public sector.
So let's stay with your last point there, Josh, because I think that's a key. Justice Scalia passes away, so it's 4-4. This is not the same case. So is there anything in any way of significant difference where legally you would see an avenue where one of the conservative justices who voted one way would look at this particular case? To a lot of us from the outside, seems the same. But because they know the law so extraordinarily well, they would see it differently and they would surprise us with their vote.
It doesn't look like it. There's nothing in the oral arguments today to suggest that any of those 4 are getting cold feet. And there's nothing fundamentally about what the legal arguments are here that you would think would lead someone to come down one way on Friedrichs and another on Janus. There are certainly all kinds of arguments people have tried to make designed to sway those conservative justices. You have leading libertarian legal scholars who filed an amicus brief saying, hey, we're libertarians, we love the First Amendment, we don't even like unions that much, but we still think the unions are right on the law here, that there's not actually a First Amendment right not to pay for something that expresses a view you disagree with, because if there were, then what about taxes, for example?
Well,
you also have some labor activists who've brought cases saying, hey, wait a minute, if the First Amendment covers union collective bargaining, then why is it not unconstitutional to restrict union collective bargaining? So there are efforts to try to get the conservatives to back away from the ledge, so to speak, but there's not any real sign that they've gotten traction with the 5 conservatives who are actually on the Supreme Court.
So when so many defenders of unions, and they believe it the way they've lived or their study history, think this is an enormous decision that will borderline gut unions, is that hyperbolic or is that accurate?
Well, we'll know more in a few years, assuming that the court goes the way everyone thinks. We will see how well the unions do at holding on to members who might prefer not to be spending that money on paying union dues. We know that a few years ago, as I reported in Business Week, there was an estimate by AFSCME, one of the big public sector unions, that they did internally where they thought about half of their membership could be on the fence about whether to continue paying dues, and another 15% unlikely to do it. So they have been working very hard in AFSCME and in other unions to change those numbers, to preemptively organize people to want to be active activists in the union as well as people who are paying dues rather than free riding.
Josh Idelson is with us. We're talking about what's taking place today, or what already took place, on this union issue in front of the Supreme Court. You mentioned it briefly. Was there anything that stood out in any particular way about the oral arguments that was out of the ordinary from what you'd expect from the 9 justices?
Well, lots of eyes were on Justice Gorsuch, because while he is not normally the swing vote, he is the only one who didn't vote in that last Friedrichs case that deadlocked. And he did not ask questions and did not say anything. The 4 conservatives who were there before, on the other hand, made comments that seemed to be in line with, again, voting to make the public sector right to work, talking about how public sector unionism leads to bigger government, that in a sense, the government becomes complicit in negotiating with the unions to have more government, more costs, talking about how the unions could adjust and become more efficient. And you had the four liberals on the court arguing that this is an attack on unions and an attack on the court's precedent and an application of the First Amendment that isn't consistent with how other situations and other organizations have been treated under the law.
Let's briefly talk about what happened, or maybe more precisely, what didn't happen at the Supreme Court with DACA today. It wasn't necessarily a long-term loss for President Trump, but it was a short-term loss when the court basically said, continue the normal appeals process. Is that the best way to look at it?
That's right. The White House was looking for something unusual, which was to skip the appeals court level and go straight to Supreme Court review, and the Supreme Court politely declined. So this is an issue that could still end up at the Supreme Court, but it's one that the justices turned out not to be so eager to take out of the hands of the appeals court.
And that's fairly typical, the way they reacted today?
Well, the request itself is unusual. So for this to go through the appeals court before potentially going to the Supreme Court is not an unusual thing.
Good stuff. We'll reach out to you again. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Josh Edelson on the union case, which has a lot of ramifications going forward as soon as this summer. And certainly DACA has been a huge issue with the political side and the legal side. Interesting comments on that also. 150. Time to improve the look of your home with Infinity by Marvin Window. That is your Lindis construction time check. Lindsay out today for a great reason, though. She's celebrating her mom's birthday. Lindsay's back with us tomorrow. Appreciate Hammer helping out all day today. Hammer's getting $10,000 for helping out today. Congratulations to you, Hammer.
Canadian money, right?
Canadian money. I know when you send in a text to us, instead of getting the normal thank you, you're getting, we don't recognize your message. Did you mean to enter our national contest? Because Keyword for Cash is back. The brain wizards who need to know about this, no.
Our best people are on it.
How do I? I feel good about it. I believe in our best people. You don't. I mean, I don't know why you feel that way, Hammer.
Maybe one person.
Yeah, wow. Well, if you'd like to name that name and then turn in your fob at the same time, maybe that'd be the way to go. So, yeah, I don't like it because I love when people text us and I get how folks are getting the mixed message of, wait a second, I'm commenting on the story, I'm needling you or whatever, and you're getting this response. Keep texting. They're just trying to tell you. The basic premise was, instead of texting the keyword for cash to 81807, no, you dope, send it here. That's what it was.
Different number.
We're trying to figure this out. About 90 seconds left. Brian Murphy in the house, in the building. He's going to join us in about 5 minutes or so. We talked a lot about Orono last week when the schools were shut down. Pretty interesting now. The $25,000 is raised to help the family of a boy who posted the social media threats. Claire Barrett, an Orono parent, started the GoFundMe page to help the family of a boy. We just felt a lot of compassion and wanted to lift up the families going through this incredible challenge. She wrote that the boy has autism, a fact that is the overriding piece that everyone needs to keep in mind when considering social media posts. Police put the public schools on lockdown. As we said, the boy was arrested at school and taken to Hennepin County Juvenile Detention Center. This is something that, you know, I've mentioned many times resonates with me as the father of a son who's on the autism spectrum. And we've had a number of guests on this where how can police be more aware of the challenges, the intellectual challenges that certain kids are facing? And where is that line? Because if you wait too long and God forbid something happens and you're trying to do it out of compassion, you're going to be criticized endlessly because obviously there's a mental health component in what took place in Parkland. So it's a very interesting story. I understand the compassion, but the dilemma is very tough. And I'll be curious how it plays out over a long period of time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.